All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool. And Jonathan, we got a good one today, man.
Yeah. You sent me a book this week. I'd never heard of it. Never.
Yeah, it's kind of a forgotten book for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's one I stumbled across just because I, as a copywriter, the author is one of those kind of list of copywriters that if you really, you know, go down the wormhole of copywriting and copywriting greats, you run across his name.
Right.
So it's Bruce Barden. And just because as I was looking for some stuff a few years back, I ran across a book he wrote. Mm-hmm. And the title of the book, and I won't give away the subtitle yet, but the title of the book is The Man Nobody Knows.
Okay.
And it's a really interesting case study in a lot of different ways. And that's why I wanted to bring it on the show, is because it's a great example of taking something that's thought of pretty commonly and putting a completely new spin on it. Mm-hmm. So that's one angle. And we've talked about that when we went through Eugene Schwartz's book. And by the way, this copywriter's from the 1920s, so 100 years ago. And
that's back during some of those early guys, you know, like
same time he would have probably been competing against the Claude Hopkins, mm-hmm, and Caples and some of those guys. So it's a great example of taking a long kind of an ordinary topic, mm-hmm, and totally transforming it. And in the back in the day, this book did really well. It was one of his best selling books. And then the other thing, the book itself reveals some really interesting kind of things about advertising and running a business and persuasion and all these different things. So we're going to be talking about those as well. And just to tease a little further, so The Man Nobody Knows is this guy, mm-hmm, named Jesus.
Just some guy named Jesus.
Yeah. So, and
we'll have to learn more about this guy.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So that you're like, well, everybody knows about Jesus. Well, right. Do they? And that was his take on the book. And
everybody knows what their perception of that man is.
Right. Kind of what they've been told and the way they've been told it has led to a certain thing. But he makes the, so I'll just read this little piece here and then we'll get into our beverages. But it says, so this book was basically a recasting of Jesus as the founder of modern business, mm-hmm, whose self-confident leadership modeled the best of executive skill, mm-hmm, and whose parables reflected the essentials of effective advertising. Mm. So that's not the way we typically think of Jesus, the great teacher, prophet of love, whatever you know, whether you're a fan of Christianity, the Bible or not, like, mm-hmm, everybody agrees that Jesus was a great teacher, mm-hmm, very influential, created a huge movement. I mean, our calendar is based off of his life and death. So pretty influential. It's
kind of a big deal.
So we're going to see what this guy says is why nobody actually knows Jesus and what we can learn about business and advertising and persuasion from Bruce Barden's book, The Man Nobody Knows.
Interesting.
So I love this thing. I've been pulling quotes from it and underlining stuff. And
now the quote that you mentioned on our last episode was really, really good. That's one that I've highlighted for sure. That's it stuck out to me big time because you sent me the quote this week, and I'm like, wow, that is so good. You know?
Yeah. It's one of those kind of truths that as soon as you see it, and this was not something Jesus said, this was what was in the book, but just like, you're like, as soon as you see it, you're like, oh yeah, mm-hmm, that makes sense. And even when I mentioned on our last episode with Joe, like as soon as I said it, he was like, yeah, couldn't say it any better.
Yep.
And that's a guy with, you know, 50 years of business experience.
Yeah.
Okay. I think, I went first on the last episode. So,
okay.
I'll let you fire off the beverage portion of the show.
All right. Well, I'm breaking out something incredibly new. I almost introduced it on our last episode, but when I realized who Joe, when I saw him come on, he's kind of this New York guy. I quickly took it back to the fridge because I was a little embarrassed.
Uh-oh.
Because I was like, here's this stuff New Yorker, and he's bringing out some, I think he brought an amber ale out, which is not a big deal, but still, I was like, I'm going to introduce this. I think I'll hold this one off till the next episode and bring back, kind of that tough bourbon barrel ale, that was a hit with him. I don't think this might not have been a hit, but it's something I was interested enough to pick up to actually try. It is a banana bread beer. Have you seen this?
I have not, but I feel like I heard that somewhere, but I don't know. Like, it actually sounds familiar, which is pretty odd because that doesn't sound like common at all. So banana bread beer.
So this is
two things I like for sure. So
yeah, I love banana bread. So
yeah,
you're ever going through, I love my wife's grandmother. Of course, she makes the best thing she makes is her homemade cranberry bread. I love banana bread too. But if I'm going through like a Starbucks or something, sometimes in the evening or something like that, or if I pull in having a coffee and I see that, man, I might get a slice of that banana bread. It's really mm-hmm. good. But this caught my attention. It's an England fruit beer. So I don't know anything about banana bread or this particular brewery. It says this dark golden colored ale hugs the palate with intensity. Its malty aroma is complemented by the gentle nose of banana. Gentle nose wow. banana. So I don't know what to expect when I drink this. I don't know what's going to happen here, Sean. So I'm just, I'm leaving this open to anticipation. Well,
last week, two episodes ago, I had the cherry beer and it was really good. So,
yeah, right. So,
I never know
into the fruit basket.
Maybe we just make the show about fruit beers. I mean, that's,
that's good. That's good. I mean, it's a little too fruity. You can definitely taste the banana.
Yeah.
And I happen to like banana.
Yeah. So I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So speaking of banana bread, Tamara makes a banana bread, mm-hmm. but what she does is she'll add in like frozen blueberries.
Oh, okay.
With the banana bread mm-hmm. and it keep like something about the frozen blueberry specifically makes the bread super moist.
Oh,
it's so good.
That's interesting. So good. Frozen yeah. blueberries in with the banana bread. So it's kind of, offers kind of a nice balance having the little, with blueberries, there's a sweet and citrusy. So
yeah, it's kind of like a blueberry pancake. You mm-hmm. get that kind of extra yeah. little something.
I can
something.
See that.
All right. So here's what I got going on. I've had this company featured a few times. It's Tupps Brewery.
Yep.
We've done the full grown Saint Nick, which was a Christmas beer. Mm-hmm. We've done the full grown Man Child,
right?
Which is which was a stout, and now I'm doing the full grown man minus the child, right? So this is just the full strength, full grown man beer, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a whopping 12.1% alcohol imperial stout. And it says, grow to your full potential with this chewy bearded imperial wonder.
What? Chewy
bearded imperial wonder.
Okay.
So,
then.
I even let my beard, I was going to trim it up and I would let it get a little bit longer just because I knew I was drinking this beard. And by the end of this episode, it may get even longer. I mean, that's how powerful this stuff is. So, I'm going to crack it open.
Yeah.
All right.
Wait, here we go.
I'm guessing that was a bottle top of a can, but close enough. I'm guessing this is probably going to pour like maple syrup.
There you go.
Like one of those. That's not too thick. Well,
yes.
A little molasses pour there. Big, big, thick head.
Here we go.
That's nice.
That's beautiful. That is beautiful.
And I got to let that settle, so I'll just drink it out of the can for my first sip.
So do you feel like a man?
Whew, that is, it's got some sweetness to it too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, does it?
Okay. And a little bitter. It's interesting. IBUs are 50 on it. It's pretty high.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's got, I like their cans because they have like this whole profile on the side.
Yeah. It seems like they stick to the, you know, that look with the bearded, yeah,
for sure.
Bearded dude on the front.
That's what they said in the meeting, I think. We should put a bearded dude on the front of the can. Right. And it's kind of like Black Rifle Coffee. Mm-hmm. You familiar with those guys and their advertising? Yeah. Now? It's like, let's shoot a gun and sell coffee. Makes sense.
People will buy it.
I'm not sure how shooting guns and coffee go together, but they have found a way to make it work.
That's right. For sure. It's a manly coffee, you know?
It definitely is. You know, they opened up a actual Black Rifle Coffee just north of San Antonio. It's about an hour and a half from here.
Okay. Yeah,
they got the whole cafe. Mm-hmm. You can buy the gear, the coffee, sit in there and have coffee, all that kind of stuff.
They were advertising their coffee on one of the Facebook ads. And I've got a new Keurig maker here in my office. And you know what? I was like, I'm going to order some of that.
I found another company through Capitalism and somebody, we interviewed them. It's Firehouse Coffee. And they have, check this out, spirit-infused coffee.
Spirit-infused.
So I have a bourbon coffee coming my way.
Yeah, you sent me that. Was that the one you sent me? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is. I did send you that. So they also have tequila.
That looks amazing.
And rum, something else. So
is this brought to you by the guys at Firehouse Subs? Have they branched off?
Different Firehouse, I think. This is the morning Firehouse. The subs are for lunch. So, all right. I know you got a hard stop today while we're recording this. So let's jump in. So first of all, I sent you this book. You got the Kindle version. The Man Nobody Knows by Bruce Barton. And just what was your takeaway so far of what you've read? I don't know if you got through the whole thing or not.
I haven't, but it's interesting because it does give a different perspective. As we were talking, at the very beginning, you mentioned that quote on the last episode and I'm pulling it up here, the notes, if you go through the book, it's kind of broken down into the leadership, the communication, how he communicated. And so it goes through each of these types of, personality perspectives of Jesus and how he, you know, how he became such a powerful leader. People want to know, okay, to this day, people talk about Jesus, and regardless of what you believe, we're Christians. So we hold to the Christian faith. We believe in Christ, but some people out there still, regardless of being Christians, they believe is that, you know, they understand Jesus and they believe him to be a great man, a great prophet, a great leader who obviously took a few guys and turned it into a tremendous movement that, you know, some would argue has philosophically changed the world. So how did he do this? You know, and so you start getting into the book, and some people have a really nice, cozy view of who Jesus is. If you read through this book, you gain a better understanding of who he really is from a practical standpoint.
Yeah, and it's, there's a lot of reading between the lines of what you might find in the Bible, right? Yeah. So, but, you know, I love that a copywriter wrote this because they were able to kind of just to do that, to read between the lines and be like, well, he must have been this way to get that response, to grow up in these times.
Sure.
You know, so in the beginning of the book, just to set the scene for people, he basically kind of tells the story of this kid sitting in Sunday school and the teacher's talking about Jesus and what a great person he is. And he's looking up at the picture on the wall and it's like this soft, frail Lamb of God, you know, but every other picture in the room was like David was slinging a stone, killing Goliath, and Samson was, you know, pushing over temple and like killing, you know, people with a donkey jawbone. I mean, like that's cool stuff to a, you know, a 5-year-old or, you know, a first grader boy. And he's like, why was Jesus so weak and so frail and so whatever?
Right.
So throughout his life, he began to question it. And, he's like, I wish somebody would write a book. And finally he said, oh, I guess nobody's going to write it. I guess I will. And he said he went through it with like a very, like a, any historical figure where he just like, he knew nothing about it and mm-hmm. he just read it mm-hmm. and just kind of made all these, you know, ideas about who he must have been to inspire the mm-hmm. types of reactions he was getting from people. So, which fits perfectly with our show, Persuasion.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the story of Jesus, is he persuaded, you know, people to follow him and start the movement, like you said. Mm-hmm. In the book, it says, Jesus built the greatest organization of all. Mm-hmm. You know, it's extraordinary. And it says, only strong, magnetic men inspire great enthusiasm and build great organizations. And Jesus built the greatest of them all. So, in the book, it goes through like the outdoor man, the sociable man, his method, his advertisements, the founder of modern business, and the master. So we're going to go through, we'll probably just, unless you have some others for the sake of time, we'll talk a little bit about the executive, mm-hmm. his method,
yeah,
and his advertisements. And if we've got time, we can dip back into the other things.
Okay, that works.
So, yeah, so on the executive, that's the quote I mentioned on the last show. Mm-hmm. And kind of the point there is, you know, he had this ability to just draw people to him in just a really powerful way. Mm. And, you know, we've heard of, you know, presidential candidates and CEOs, you know, celebrity CEOs. And regardless of your politics, you know, I hear over and over and over. And we had, when Patty was on the show, we talked about this. Yes. Briefly, we talked about to get to that level, there has to be some amount of charisma that gets you to that level. And people yes. always say, you know, when you hear reports of presidents and people that were in the room with them, they always say, it's like you're the only person in the room. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine Jesus had much the same effect with people. And the question is why?
Yeah.
Why do other great leaders have that effect on people? Mm-hmm. And a quote that I read on the last episode and that you highlighted and I've highlighted answers the question why and how. And that is, the essential element in personal magnetism is a consuming sincerity, an overwhelming faith in the importance of the work one has to do. It's this quality of conviction that what you're up to is really important.
Yeah.
And whether you're, you know, selling manufacturing like you're doing, whether you're writing copy or coaching or whatever you're doing, mm-hmm. Selling information products, mm-hmm. Whatever you're doing, if you can have that conviction about what you're doing, it makes all the difference.
Oh, absolutely. People are so persuasive, or you buy into people's stories when they can tell the story of why they, you know, obviously going back to starting with why they're doing something, why they're on a mission to do this. Yeah. And people tend to get on board when they know that there's a sincerity about a cause and somebody that's really true to what they want to do. I mean, they are driven to accomplishing a certain goal. It's an attractive trait.
Absolutely. And in the book, he broke it down into basically three parts, this kind of this magnetism. Number one was what he calls a blazing conviction.
Yeah.
Like just knew what he was up to. I'm about my father's business. Didn't hesitate on it. Mm. You know, just came out and said it. You know, when I first got into copywriting, there was a point, kind of a line of, where I had to cross to become a copywriter. And that was when I was willing to say, when somebody asked what I did, I'm a copywriter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And I heard actually Brooke Castillo, who's owns the Life Coach School. She said the same thing. She went from, you know, 300,000 a year to now 25 million per year with her company in about 5 years. And she said the thing that made the difference was when she owned the fact that she was a life coach.
Yeah.
And didn't try to put any other label on it. Didn't mm-hmm. try to fancy it up, pretty it up, cute it up. Mm-hmm. And that's actually when she registered the domain, the Life Coach School, and built this business around the Life Coach School.
Yeah.
And she owned the fact that she was a life coach.
Sure.
As opposed to just like, oh, I'm a personal development, you know, whatever, blah, right? Because you don't want to say life coach.
Right, right. That's taboo.
Right?
You know, you're like, yeah. No one will buy into that. So we give it all these fancy names and everything.
Right. And you know, you've seen it in your sales career, probably a new salesperson will come in and they don't want to say they're in sales.
No. They want to say
customer advocate or whatever
manager or, you know, even sales engineer. So you actually sound like you're an engineer. So you'll relate better to engineers. You know, people do that all the time. So
and Jesus said, I'm the son of God. I'm about my father's business.
Exactly.
Talk about a bold claim.
Right, right, right.
I mean, that's pretty bold.
Sums it up, you know, clear, concise.
So number one was his just blazing conviction. Number two reason for his success was his ability to pick men and to recognize hidden capabilities in them. You know, he didn't pick the A players. He didn't go to the synagogue and pick the priests mm-hmm. to share his message. He went out to the people. He found hardworking people.
Fishermen.
Kind of like Joe said on the, and kind of like Joe said on the last episode, people with heart.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And found those people.
Yep.
And then number three, I thought was cool. Unending patience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had this ability to just kind of work with those 12 guys. I mean, he spent 3 years walking around the country,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you've been on some road marches and some rucks. And,
oh yeah.
You know, there's a lot of time to talk and bond and to, you know, really find out about people.
Yeah.
When you're just walking mm-hmm. for hours and hours and hours on end. We don't really do that much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I can imagine those relationships got very deep.
Sure they did.
Very quickly. Sleeping outside together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very much like a platoon or a squad.
Yeah.
You know, feel.
It's interesting too. You notice that these people, I mean, they were dropping what they were doing at the time to follow him on his mission. So mm-hmm. you're trying, you know, what you're looking for people that really buy in, obviously, when you're looking for the right people that buy into that vision, not in a half-hearted way, but they are following with conviction. Now, these guys weren't perfect, obviously. Mm-hmm. They were rough around the edges for the most part.
But, yeah, some of them despise. I mean, tax collector.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, or just blue collar, right. We might say, or, you know, that kind of dirty jobs type people,
yep.
right?
Yep.
You know, and which leads me to what he talks about in chapter 4 of the book, his method. And I love this part. You know, the writer in the book, Bruce Barton, he started painting the scene like the, you know, when he called the disciples, Peter, mm-hmm. you know, to come and follow me.
Yeah.
I loved how he said, you know, imagine Jesus walking by, he's passing by the shores, these fishermen out there, you know, they're busy with their day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I think we think that like they were just sitting around on a park bench waiting for somebody to come by and lead them. Like they had jobs, they had careers.
Sure.
They were tending their nets. They were probably telling jokes to each other, talking about, you know, whatever they did last night and, you know, good locker room talk on job talk, right? Like blue collar guys do all the time. And, you know, maybe one of them had a hangover from the night before, like who knows, like, but they were in their world doing their thing and they were not waiting or expecting some guy to come along and just interrupt their life.
Right.
And that's very much like what we have to deal with when we're trying to advertise or get in front of a CEO or somebody else. And he said, I love how Bruce Barton put this. He said, come with me and I will make you fishers of men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He didn't say come with me and I'll make you preachers.
Right. Right.
He didn't say, come with me and I'll make you, we're going to teach philosophy and religion to the world. He did something. He said something in a way that they could immediately identify. And we've talked about this with Breakthrough Advertising. You've got to tie your idea to a desire that already exists in their brain.
What they're familiar with.
They're already talking about fishing. I'm going to make you fishers of men. Okay. Right. I already know how to fish, but man, fishers of men, that sounds different.
Right.
and they followed him.
Yep. And yeah, I thought he didn't come up with some unique approach that they didn't quite understand.
It was slightly different, but it was immediately relatable to what they already knew.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You fish every day, so we're going to do something different.
Yeah, but the same.
We're going right? Yeah, exactly. You're still going to be fishing, but the prize is going to be a little bit bigger.
So. Yeah, and I love that because that's what we all gravitate towards is things that are new but familiar.
Right.
It's why we love, you know, movies that throw back to the 80s, mm-hmm. right? Because it's new and familiar at the same time.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it says in the book, with his very first sentence, he put himself in step with his audience. Mm. Like he immediately knew who these people were. And in one word, one phrase, he said it. You know, he got what they would.
Here's a side note here.
Okay.
The fact that he could relate to so many different people is mm-hmm. a quality of a true charismatic. You know, he's not just, he knew how to associate with these guys who are fishermen. He knew mm-hmm. how to associate with guys that are tax collectors, which in that day are kind of low lives. Let's be honest.
Kind of like the IRS today.
Right, right. Most people didn't have a very fond opinion.
I mean, could you imagine running to somebody at a party and they're like, I'm an IRS agent. You're like, oh, right. Yeah.
Right, exactly. But he had a way of being able to associate without compromise, never compromised, obviously. I mean, mm-hmm. but he had a way of being able to associate, to mingle, to the point where a lot of the scribes and the Pharisees of that time were really critical of him because he associated with so many different, you know, he wasn't associating with only them, the scholarly people that's who he should have in their opinion. He was able to relate to so many people. And you think about this, what I want to tie in is that I was listening to a podcast earlier this week, Scott Adams' podcast, and he was just talking about, and by no means am I comparing Jesus to a person like Trump, but he was using the example of Trump. But this could apply to anybody with a charismatic personality. Okay. Where can a guy like a Donald Trump go to a place like this past week, Daytona 500? He could go mm-hmm. to a Daytona 500, drive around in his beast limo, go around a couple of times on the track, and people are just hooting and hollering. And then go to a completely different environment, maybe a group of business people, African-American business people, or, you know, and completely fit in comfortably.
Yeah. Or not other world leaders.
Exactly. And not ever feel like a fish out of water. Whereas you take a lot of the other people that might be running against him or some other people, and they would look very odd to put them at, say, a NASCAR event. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
I could see Elizabeth Warren up there hooting and hollering. I mean, I don't know if she would enjoy it, but she could certainly yell.
She could yell. I don't know how comfortable.
And wave her hands around. She could wave her hand around pretty good.
But it's just, it's interesting that, you know, people that are charismatic know how to, without compromising who they are, they know how to really relate to people. And I think it gets on, like you said earlier, it's relating to the people. He knew these people were fishermen, so he talked their language.
Right.
You know, your audience, you talk their language, you relate to them, you ask them about their problems, and you identify with them. And I think that's what a lot of charismatic people do and that was the amazing part with Jesus. He could sit in a room of tax collectors or quote, you know, AKA IRS people. He could also associate with prostitutes, drunkards. I mean, anybody he could go into a room and talk with without putting down his nose, looking down his nose at them and making them feel uncomfortable.
He gave another example in the book. He, you know, when he just probably the, I don't know, the Sermon on the Mount or where it was, but, you know, he's talking to a bunch of people who are from the area. So most of them are probably farmers.
Yeah.
You know, it was an agricultural culture at the time. So he starts out his, you know, his big talk. He mm-hmm. starts it out with a sower went forth to sow and some, you know, he sowed some seeds that fell by the wayside and birds came and devoured them up. Mm-hmm. Well, immediately those farmers be like, oh, this guy knows my life.
Right.
He knows what I've been through.
I know that problem.
I know that problem. Exactly. And, you know, immediately he gets rapport with them and then is able to just like continue his story.
Right.
And so his very first sentence, let them know that he could relate.
Sure.
Or he knew at least who, it's kind of like what we said on the last episode too. People want to be seen.
Yeah.
They want to be understood. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that on a lot of episodes, but you know, people just want to be recognized.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's, yes, that's good. So let's move into chapter 5.
Okay.
And we're hitting this pretty quick. So, you know, the book is available on both Kindle and Amazon. We'll put links in the show notes. I forgot to show my copy, but I've got like an old hardback copy that you can't really get anymore. But unless there might be a couple of used versions on the old Amazon, but they do have a paperback version that's like $12 and it's a pretty quick read too. It's not, some of the language is a little bit old cause it's from the '20s. But it goes a little bit more in depth than what we're going today. So chapter 5, he talks about his advertisements, how he advertised his message to the world. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was really, really interesting. A couple of things I had underlined and I'll see what you had underlined and highlighted. But one is he advertised by his service, not merely his sermons. Mm-hmm. So he did sermons, but he also was doing miracles and he was doing, you know, feeding people. And so by his service, he was also getting attention. Because back in the day, I mean, there was no, you know, back in the Bible times, there was no, you know, newspaper, you know, you pretty much had the town square, kind of word of mouth and those kind of things. So, you know, if he made a stir in a town, then he got some attention and people gathered around and then he could preach the message.
Yeah.
And another thing I thought was interesting, he said few of his sermons were delivered in the synagogues. For the most part, he was in the crowded places, you know, the temple courts, the city squares, the markets, those kind of places. And so that kind of begs the question, where is that today?
Yeah.
When Bruce Barton was writing this book, it was newspapers and magazines for the most part. Today, we might say that's, you know, combination of TV, Facebook, Instagram, you know, social media, obviously is a big one. Yeah. Podcasts are another one. Like these are where people are coming to hear things, where they're coming to do business. And if you can sync your, and his point is like, you've got to put your message where people are gathering. And that's what advertising is. And the other thing I thought was cool, he said, you know, he talked about the parables and he gave four big elements of what makes his parables work. Mm-hmm. And I thought those were good. But did you have anything before we move on to those that...
No, I mean, the thing I was going to mention has to do with the parables and
just... I'll let you kick that off then.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So I was going to mention in regarding Jesus' parables, this is interesting because I don't think about this very often, but he talks about just how simple, if you look at any of Jesus's parables, just how simple they are. He doesn't, he never starts with an introduction. So he's not like setting this up. Like you've got to, you know, he doesn't think of you as having to set everything up. He goes right into it. You know, and it's real simple, you know, goes right into it. You know, he doesn't give you any fluff. I mean, that's, it's his, most of his stories are very short and to the point.
I know when I write copy and I'll send it to a friend or whatever, when I was on staff, you know, at Stansberry, one of the first things that would happen when somebody edits your copy is they'd be like, they'd cut the whole like first half a page because it was all warm up.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. You're just trying to, you're kind of getting warmed up and going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he got right into it with the first sentence. Like we said in the other two, it's like, I'll make you fishers of men.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Who are you? Like, what? Like, he didn't say, he didn't go through his whole lineage like in the Old Testament, right? He didn't go through his, or the book, the first part of Matthew,
right?
Like the book of Matthew, you know, and the lineage wasn't written when Jesus was around. That was written after the fact.
Yep.
So it's not like he could say that it wasn't. but today we're like, well, I was a best-selling author. I've spoken here. I've done this. I've done this, blah, blah, blah. he immediately just went with the, whatever was relatable to the people he was talking to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When he wanted a new disciple, what did he say?
Follow me.
Can't get any simpler than that, right?
Yeah. So that first sentence was just like, boom, just grips your attention. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm sure it was not just what was said. It's the way it was said. And, and you know, like the very first quote, it's like that personal magnetism of knowing what you're up to. Mm-hmm. And we talk about this in coaching, and I talk about this with my coaching clients, like, who are you being? And you know this from sales, like, if you don't show up certain in that sales appointment, you're toast. If you bring your bad day into the meeting room, you're done. Yep. Like, you got to know what you're up to and carry that and know who you are as a person,
right?
That you're offering a great service and all that stuff.
That's a good point. Cause conviction, we go back to the conviction of what you, of who you are and what you represent. If you don't have that, people see right through it. And you might as well forget about it. Cause if they don't feel like you're completely sold on what you're trying to do, then they won't take you serious. So I think that's so important. You know, again, going back to that charismatic, people are naturally attracted to people who know what they want and are passionate enough to sell it and to talk about it no matter what. You know, they have a burning desire.
So. Yeah. And talk about simplicity. He, in the book, he talks about the Lord's Prayer, the 23rd Psalm, the Gettysburg Address. Obviously, Jesus didn't do the Gettysburg Address. I know that, just for our listeners, just for our fact checkers out there. But it was in the book. You know, the opening lines for each of those are, Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. The Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want. 7 years ago. Like, these are all very simple, one, two syllable type words.
Sure.
And, you know, he makes the point that all of the greatest things in human life are one syllable words, at least in English. Love, joy, hope, home, child, wife, trust, faith, God, sex, food. Mm-hmm. Like, these are all like one syllable words, right?
Sure.
And that's what people are either trying to get more of or whatever. And we try to make these big flowery words or, you know, all this. And the fact is, and we've talked about this with copy, you know, you want to write on that third grade level. Mm-hmm. And that means one and two syllable words.
Right.
He also points out, like, very few adjectives.
No. Yeah.
In a lot of his stuff.
Right.
Lots of verbs and
rarely see a lot of adjectives.
Yeah.
And his parables, I mean, going back to his parables,
right.
You know, a man had two sons. How simple can you start? I mean, there, because, you know, we're writing a story. We want to, like, oh, you know, there's this guy, his name, you know, he lived out on this farm and, you know, we go and get all the backdrop, you know, paint.
Yeah, that's the Georgia, good old boy, Georgia version right there.
Paint the backdrop. You know. Got to paint the backdrop.
Yeah.
Man had two sons.
That's funny you say that. Man had two sons. As soon as you said that, I was like, that's the Wall Street Journal article. I mean, ad. Yep. They sold over $1 billion, right?
That's right.
Two guys graduated from school. That's how that one started.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
That's probably where they got it from now that I think about it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to start doing a little more parables for my copy.
Yeah, think of the other one. What is it? A sower went forth to sow. I mean, who is this guy? You know, we don't have to paint a picture on who this guy is. That's not the point.
Yeah, we don't need to know that, you know, he's a third generation farmer.
Right.
You know, blah, 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 blah. Like, no, like, what's the slimmest, most concise thing we can do? And that, you know, that takes either a lot of practice or it takes an incredible amount of just self-discipline.
And in this day and age, it's even more important. I mean, you think about, I mean, where we are today, you've got to be simple, keep it simple and to the point. Simplicity rules, because of everything that we have to, that we're bombarded with every day. So,
yeah. And then the next thing he talks about in the parables is sincerity. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I you know, I underline with that is the public has a sixth sense for detecting insincerity.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's, and for that matter, fact checking, mm-hmm. like you want to find out that something's, you know, true, just throw it up on Twitter and like, you'll find out like
instantly.
The engineers will come and tell you and give you the sources and like, you know, don't accidentally post, mm-hmm. you know, a satire article thinking it's real.
Sure.
Cause you will get found out very quickly, you know? So, you know, so, but even that, you know, even beyond like fact checking, people have just this ability to sense when somebody's kind of doing it for show versus doing it for that conviction that we talked about right at the top of the show. Yep. And that goes back to our conversation with Patty a few weeks ago mm-hmm. and just all the nonverbal cues that we pick up on.
Oh, yeah.
And as video gets more and more popular online, you're going to be able to pick up on more and more of that too.
Yep.
And then I love the fourth thing is repetition. Mm-hmm. Like all his parables, Bruce Barton in the book, he says, you know, he had basically one or two or three big ideas.
Yeah.
Right. I'm the son of God. God is love. Heaven is a cool place. Like that's kind of the,
sure.
the big ideas, but he had, you know, one time if God's a loving father, one time he's a shepherd searching the wilds for a wandering sheep. Another, he's a father welcoming home a prodigal boy. And another, he's a king who forgives a debtor. So he said the same big idea, mm-hmm. mercy, forgiveness, but he said in a lot of different ways, different stories, and the way Bruce Barton puts it, many stories, many advertisements, but the same big idea.
Sure.
And I think this is one place where big branding companies get it right. Mm-hmm. Their big idea may not be like a truly big idea, yep. but I think of Geico, right? 15 minutes will save you, blah, 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 right? Everybody knows that, but it's like, but they do it across so many different platforms and so many different little stories and different angles and different characters.
Yeah.
That repetition, like it gets to you,
right.
whether it's them or Progressive or Allstate or whatever, Farmers, whoever, they're all, you know, they say their same core message over and over and over in slightly different ways.
Yeah.
And we get tired of our own message way too early.
Way too early.
So if you
hear it too often.
Right. So if you can figure out what your big idea is and don't be creative with it, like get really certain and convicted on it, and then get creative on how you tell the parables you use, the stories you use, the customer testimonials you use, the examples you use, the metaphors you use that all feed back to the one core big idea. Then you can be as creative as you want sure. and not get bored.
Right.
But stick because to the one idea.
You haven't changed the big idea.
You've right.
only changed, you're only tweaking the parables or the stories that you tell.
Right. So yeah. your audience doesn't get confused.
Like Geico, like you just said, you know.
Yeah.
They have a lot of ways to save, yeah. you know, for to get that message across that they always promote.
Right.
And they're really creative in doing it, but.
But the audience is not confused that they sell insurance and you can save 15%.
That's
like
right.
the audience knows that.
That's right.
Right. And when they're ready to buy, they may or may not, they're probably going to give them a shot yeah. if nothing else. Mm-hmm. But if they were to like, oh, we save 15%. Oh no, we've got the best, you know, service. Mm-hmm. No, you know, we'll drive to your house or you know, whatever. Like if they tried to change their big idea,
yeah.
people would be like, what?
Right.
But because they just tell it with different stories, it's fine.
Yep.
And I think that was a great takeaway. Mm-hmm. And then the last little section is chapter 6, at least that we're going to talk about. And that is the founder. So Bruce Barton makes a pretty bold claim here. He says, Jesus was the founder of modern business. Mm. That's a, like, I don't think most people would just, that would be the first thing they think of when they say Jesus.
Right.
The founder of modern business.
The founder of modern business. All right, give us a quick overview of that.
Yeah, so the quick overview of that is there's basically three main points of his business philosophy because, and I loved how he pulled this piece out like a good copywriter, Bruce Barton. He's like, you know, Jesus said he's about his father's business, right? So that's where he gets the seed of the idea for the whole book, I bet. Right. It's like Jesus about his father's business. Mm-hmm. So what is the business of God? And basically the core business philosophy can be summed up in 3 points. Whoever will be great must render service. Mm. And we've talked about this, you know, dozens of times where, you know, you got to figure out how can you serve the marketplace, yep. give them something they need.
Right.
Number two, whoever will find himself at the top must be willing to lose himself at the bottom. So this is the first shall be last, the last shall be first, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to be willing to do the grunt work. I mean, on our last episode, Joe, you know, he started out scrubbing toilets and now he owns a $14 million security firm,
yep.
you know, but he was willing to do that. And it's the attitude and the heart of being willing to scrub toilets if needed.
Yep.
And then, the third thing is the big rewards come to those who travel the second undemanded mile. Mm-hmm. And we've all heard about the second mile and, yep. you know, the second mile is the least crowded and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And if you're willing to do that and go the second mile with people, send them handwritten notes to follow up with them, to send them a birthday card on their birthday as sure. a client or even a prospect, mm-hmm. then you're gonna be magnetic to them and they're gonna follow you. Mm.
Good stuff. So, name of the book again for our listeners.
Name of the book is The Man Nobody Knows by Bruce Barton.
Barton.
I don't know if that's backwards. Looks like it's backwards. So.
Yep. And like Sean said, you can find it on Amazon. You can get it. I actually just downloaded, I mean, the Kindle version is $2 and you can go through it.
Yeah, it's a pretty quick read.
Yeah, it's a very quick read. But check it out.
As it should be written by a copywriter. Should be.
Exactly. Well, what did we just talk about? Keep it simple.
Simple.
Short stories and get it to the point. So, yeah, check it out. It's good. John, this is good. Maybe we can follow up on it, but we're short on time. But as always, people can find us at persuasionbythepint.com. Check us out on all of your podcast platforms. We'll put a link to the book on the show page so you can check it out yourself. But anyway, hope everyone has a great week. Sean, it's been fun. See you next time.
All right. Have a good one.